Every year, my family goes to holiday on holiday to Cornwall, and we go to a little village called Porroon by Foy. And when it rains, as it often does, we sometimes go to a superstore called Trago Mills, which is famous for its reductions. I don't know if you've been down there, down in Cornwall, to that superstore. It's extraordinary. The store is the idea of and run by a man called Bruce Robinson. And a couple of years ago, Mr. Robinson had his advertisement for Father Christmases to fill seasonal vacancies rejected by the Liscard Job Centre on the basis of sex discrimination. And this was the letter that he wrote in response. He wrote this, I quote, "With no disrespect to ladies, Father Christmas is and always has been a man. However, I guarantee to be entirely impartial in the selection of father stroke mother Christmases, and therefore the person, if female, should have a deep voice, long grey whiskers, a big belly, and no discernible bosom. Should such a female candidate be successful, my only concern is for our children, who will doubtless be terrified." Apparently one local Cornish farmer was heard to remark that they should be sure to find numerous suitable candidates in Liscard. And mention of Father Christmas does... Sorry, if you're from Liscard, I apologise about that. Mention of Father Christmas does prompt the question, what is Christmas all about? I mean, I remember at school walking into Woolies one tea time. That was, of course, before it went bust, but I remember walking in, and it was the last week of the Christmas term, and I guess I was 13, and I saw the decorations, and I saw all the red and the tinsel, and I was suddenly just so pleased. I was so excited that it was the end of term, and that my work was finishing, and that it was Christmas, and that there would be no more pressure, that I went into Woolies, and I literally brought a 400-gram bar of chocolate, sat down, and ate it in one sitting. Age 13, it's amazing. I mean, I'd kill myself if I tried to do that now. You may not believe it, but I would. And for me, that was Christmas. That was what it was like. It was being at home. It was no work. It was the feeling of no pressure. It was the feeling of Christmas Day, of eating so much you had to lie down after the Queen's speech. It was parties and presents, TV and turkey, Santa and sentimentality. And part of that experience, a nice part, I think many of us would say an integral part, is singing carols, is mulled wine and mince pies, is midnight mass, is church on Christmas morning, and best of all, snow if it's there. Wonderful if snow falls on Christmas morning as you're going off to church or coming back, or even better, at midnight mass. But even as we sing carols, the whole God thing can, let's be honest, nevertheless, seems so remote, so distant. So is God really there? Is he knowable? Or is God just an idea in my head, and you might have a similar idea, and that helps us through life, and that helps Woolies make sales as the carols play in the background in their shops, and that triggers a Christmas feeling that we must buy and spoil ourselves. So God is there for those who believe, and he's not there for those who don't, and you can take him off the shelf, you know, just as I did the chocolates, and make him part of Christmas if you want to. But, you know, the most famous Christmas carol won't allow Christmas to remain an idea. We'll sing it at the end. It nails it down in history. It gives us some facts to grapple with. Can you hear it? And by the way, as Christians, you know, perhaps you're listening here, we are very defensive about this, that it's historical. I'm feeling pretty defensive because it's not just an idea. The most famous carol says, once in Royal David City. So there in Bethlehem, Mary was the mother mild, Jesus Christ the little child. So we're not talking about a fairy tale. We're not talking about once upon a time, which you can take off the shelf at Christmas, at Woolies, like any other product. We're not talking about that. No, we're talking about the once upon a time in Bethlehem, the one that happened 2,000 years ago, not any old Christmas time, but the one time, the one, when God's divine messengers, the angels, come and proclaim that the child whom, if you go to Bethlehem, you can see, is none other than the one who came down to earth from heaven, who is God and Lord of all. And if you go to Bethlehem, you can see him. And that is precisely what we're on about, that the one who is God and Lord of all was the one born and laid in a manger. So he is, Hebrews 1 verse 3. Can we see as we look down? I wonder if you can see it. The radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being. So God has expressed himself in Jesus, his son. He's expressed himself. In 1961, the Soviet cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin was the first man to travel in space. And when he came back down from that epic flight, he reported to the Soviet people, God is not there after all. I've been to the heavens and God is not there. But who told him to look for God in space? Had God said that he was going to be there in space? No, God says, look for me in Jesus. Look for me in my son. Here he is, Hebrews 1 verse 3, the radiance of God's glory, the exact representation of his being. So Christmas says, yes, yes, yes. Yes, God is there. Yes, he does have objective reality. Yes, he's more than just an idea in your head, than a product on the shelf that makes you feel better. He's more than that. And God is not hiding. He wishes to be seen. He wishes to be heard. He's declared himself. Here's the issue in the person of Jesus. He declares himself. Hebrews 1 verse 1. Can we see as we look down? There it is. In the past, God spoke to our forefathers through the prophets at many times and in various ways. So that's the Old Testament as God unfolded his plan for the world. And it's incredibly important. God is speaking to us in the Old Testament. It certainly is a record of God speaking. But verse 2, can we see? In these last days, he's spoken to us by his Son. So Jesus, here's the issue, left the splendor of heaven and came down, down, down and went into the womb of Mary. Week 6, an embryo no bigger than an apple pip. Week 7, no bigger than a small grape. Week 8, about the size of a strawberry. And he came to meet us. John 1 verse 14 says, the word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. Extraordinary. And he cut and bled. He was bruised. He spoke. He interacted. But I guess the issue is, who exactly is this baby born in Bethlehem? What do Christians claim about him? As God speaks to us through him and in him, this is a massive issue for the Hebrews, the Jewish Christians to whom this exhortation it was first written, this book of Hebrews, were being ridiculed for converting to Christ and being accused of abandoning the faith of their fathers. And life was getting very difficult. So who is he? And so the writer goes straight to the heart of the matter. Right at the start, he says, now get your head around this, if you can, this Christmas. Just get your head around who I'm saying Jesus is. This is the identity of the one who came to Christmas and who, in the midst of this persecution and ridicule, you are tempted to abandon, you Hebrews. This is who he is. And as I say this, hold on to your seats. Because the writer here detonates a theological rocket. For he says, can we see Hebrews 1 verse 2? But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things. In other words, he is, here's the first proposition. Here's a proposition for Christmas for you. This is it. He is the one for whom the universe was made. We're saying the universe was made for Christ, the heir of all things. Now, the word all things refers to everything. It refers to the universe, and the author does not see the universe as self-existent. No, it was made, he says. But that raises a question. Well, what was it made for, this universe? I mean, you see the detailed workings of the world, of nature, of the seasons, of space, of our bodies. You know the Booper advert, don't you? Your heart beats 100,000 times a day. Your bones are as strong as cast iron. You give birth to 100 million red blood cells every day. Your brain is the most complex computer structure known to man. Your eyes can distinguish up to 1 million color surfaces. You have 60,000 blood vessels in your body. Your skin is constantly replacing itself. You're amazing. But what's it for? What am I made for? Why am I here? As Professor Stephen Dawkins writes in A Brief History of Time, we find ourselves in a bewildering world. We want to make sense of what we see around us and to ask, what is the nature of the universe? What is our place in it? Where did it and we come from? Why is it the way it is? I mean, why am I here? What is the purpose of life? And for few of us, well, most few of us rest easy with the answer being me. My achievements, we don't really rest easy with that. Well, I don't. I got a third at university. It's not great if it's me and my achievements. So we look for a bigger purpose. What about the family? Maybe the college. Society, the nation, making a contribution. Well, yeah, of course. But making a contribution to what? What is the point of being a cog in the engine if we've no idea where the train is going? What's the point? Where can we find a satisfactory purpose for our existence? And the answer is the Son of God. I don't know if you ever realized that. For it was for him that the universe and we within it were made. He is, can we see Hebrews 1 verse 2 there, appointed heir of all things. I don't know, get your head around this. The mountains, the sea, the sky, the sun, the moon, the stars, the animals, all of us are for him, and he alone is big enough, worthy enough, to be the final goal of the life of the individual, of the life of the human race, of the life and existence of the universe. He is the heir. And that makes this world and my life his inheritance. So the success or failure of my life depends on how I relate to him. So if you're a geologist, the landforms are his. And if you're a historian, the centuries are his. And if you're an astronomer, the stars are his. And if you're a medic, the human hand is his creation. And if you're a lawyer, then righteousness and justice are at the heart of his character. And if you're an artist, then the best of culture and creativity will be his delight and delight his being. The universe was made for Christ. He is the heir of all things. The cosmos is his. So please see here that the Bible will not let you leave Jesus as a baby in the Bethlehem stable. And it won't even let you leave him as a carpenter in Nazareth or a preacher in Galilee or even a savior in Jerusalem. No, this risen Christ from the dead is the heir of all things. I don't know what happened with O.J. Simpson. I don't know if he was guilty those years ago or not. He's just gone to prison for 9 years. Some people says, well, maybe that makes the first thing right. Maybe there's some recompense. I don't know, but I'll tell you one thing. Whether O.J. Simpson went to prison or not this time round, he's going to fall into the hands of the heir of the universe, who may have something to say to him about 2 murders. But it belongs to him. Their lives did. O.J. Simpson's life does. And he fills the whole universe. He is the heir. It all belongs to him. Now, can you see what a shock this was for me? I grew up thinking Christmas was a lovely feeling of escaping the real world, the world of work at school. It was all about end of term, end of term. That was what Christmas was about. But actually, to make ultimate sense of reality, to make sense of my work and my life, I had to put this baby boy in Bethlehem, who is in fact the heir of the universe, at the center. That never occurred to me at that age, as I walked in and thought, great, Christmas, I'm going to spoil myself. We're designed for Christ. Only he can give us rest for our souls. And that emptiness began to grow as I was at school slogging away, thinking, what is the point of this? And I began to see the truth of Augustine's words 1,500 years ago, but they're true today. Oh God, you've made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless till they find their rest in you. Why? Because he is the heir. He is the center of the universe. And of course he'll make us with a hole that can't be filled by anything, not even 400 grams of chocolate. Of course he will. He's got to be right at the center. But please hear, see, that's not the only thing that the universe was made for Christ. That's not the only statement here. That's proposition one. Let me throw that out. But proposition two, it was also made through Christ. It wasn't just made for him as the heir. It was made through him. Can we see verse 2 as we look down? But in these last days, he, God, has spoken to us by his Son, and through whom he made the universe. So it's not just that everything is for Jesus, but it has all been made through Jesus. So he's not just the heir of all things, he's also the agent of creation. There you are, two A's for you. He's the heir and the agent. So he was the means by which God brought the universe into being. Paul the Apostle, in his letter to the Colossians, we had this read, writes of Jesus, by whom all things were created. So Christ's birth at Bethlehem was not the start of his existence. You don't think that, do you? Do you think perhaps that Jesus' birth at Bethlehem was the start of his existence? No, no, no. He was the co-creator with the Father and the Spirit of the universe before he then came on his mission to earth. He was there at the start of the universe when God shaped and structured the dark, watery world. When he made the chaos into a cosmos. Indeed, he was the agent, Hebrews 1 verse 2, through whom he made the universe. So do you know, I guess you do, maybe some of you don't, but the moon is 211,463 miles away. I looked it up. We've been there. We know that. And the sun is 93 million miles away. That's more of a rough guess. Pluto is 2.7 billion miles away. And the North Star, which we can see many lights, is 400 trillion miles away. And it's still nearby in relation to known space. Who conceived it? Is it all by chance? Verse 2 tells us the maker was Jesus Christ. Let that explode your mind. The maker of it all, the North Star, the universe, was Jesus Christ. He was there at the start. Bethlehem wasn't the start. It was made through him. Now, here's the issue. This is the issue. Can we pause here? Tell me this. Is this the Jesus you believe in? Is this the Jesus you believe in? The original cause of everything. Don't worry, I won't ask if he's at the center of your life. And don't ask me that either. I'd be embarrassed to answer. But who is the Jesus you believe in this Christmas? I don't know. I think Bill Bryson is a wonderful, comical, self-deprecating travel writer. I love reading Bryson. If I'm on holiday, I take him with me. And this is one of his books, The Lost Continent. And he's retracing in this book a journey he made 40 years before with his family. They went as a family. He was a little eight-year-old boy. And they went to the Grand Canyon. And this is what he writes about going to the Grand Canyon as a little boy. Nothing prepares you for the Grand Canyon. No matter how many times you read about it or see it pictured, it still takes your breath away. Your mind, unable to deal with anything on this scale, just shuts down, and for many long moments, you're a human vacuum without speech or breath, but just a deep, inexpressible awe that anything on this earth could be so vast, so beautiful, so silent. Even children are stilled by it. I was a particularly talkative and obnoxious child, but it stopped me cold. I can remember rounding a corner and standing there agog while a mouthful of half-formed jabber just rolled backwards down my throat, forever unuttered. So it was an amazing experience. He first sees the Grand Canyon, and now 40 years later, he's traveling and he goes back to where his parents took him. And he's hoping to be awestruck again. And as he arrives, he finds that a blanket of fog has come down. And you cannot see anything. And so we read this. I shuffled cautiously over and looked down, but could see nothing but grey soup. A middle-aged couple came along, and as we stood chatting about what a dispiriting experience this was, a miraculous thing happened. The fog parted. It just silently drew back like a set of theatre curtains being opened. And suddenly we saw that we were on the edge of a sheer giddying drop of at least 1,000 feet. Jesus, we said, and jumped back. And all along the canyon, you could hear people saying Jesus, like a message being passed down a long line. And then for many moments, all was silence except for the tiny fretful shiftings of snow, because out there in front of us was one of the most awesome, most silencing sights that exists on earth. Can you imagine what it was like for me reading that when I believe Hebrews 1 verse 2? You see, for Bryson, Jesus is just a swear word. And he sees one of the greatest sights created on earth by Jesus, and yet just uses his name as a swear word. And I guess the question is, what do you believe in? Who do you believe in? I mean, where are you? Are you with Bryson or are you with the Bible? When it comes to who Jesus is he the creator of the universe, the Grand Canyon, or is he a swear word? Is he a vehicle for Cadbury's chocolate at Christmas or the creator of the cosmos? And in my life, there was a time when he was a swear word and a vehicle for Cadbury's. That is what he was, to my shame. Well, I want to finish and give you one final proposition, proposition three. The universe, thirdly, now hold on to your seats, is upheld by Christ. Please see Hebrews 1, verse 3. You can see how he's writing to people and saying, don't give up on Jesus, don't turn your back, whatever the persecution. Hebrews 1, verse 3. The Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word. So Christ not only made all things and will someday inherit all things, but he holds all things together in the meantime. Is that the Jesus you believe in? You see, the Bible says creation is no machine which is sort of started by God and soon forgotten. No, everything is sustained right now by Jesus Christ. The laws of gravity, the heat of the sun, the angle of the earth at 23 degrees, the consistency of the atmosphere, those things are in his hands, we're told. Indeed, the whole universe, says the Bible, hangs on the arms of Jesus Christ and is held together by his word. So it's a word that is amazingly powerful. He said, Talitha cum, to a little girl, get up, and she was raised from the dead. He flattened a storm, quiet, be still, and it was flattened. This is his powerful word. And those things were reported by, well, non-Christians as well as Christians. Non-Christian sources too, when Jesus' life, spoke of this extraordinary power. The debate was, where does it come from? But this is why we talk of a universe, not a multiverse, because he is at the center, sustaining it by his word. So how did you get up this morning? Did the alarm go? I hope not on Sunday morning. I hope you had a lie-in. Did you shower? I hope so. Did you need tea or coffee? What did you eat? How did you come here this evening? And thank you for coming. We're thrilled you're here. But do you realize you sit here because Jesus Christ sustains all things by his word? And if he stopped, you would stop, I would stop, the whole thing would end. And I treated him as a swear word and thought he was a vehicle for buying chocolate. For he is involved in the cycle of everything from the sparrows to every one of us and our loved ones. An atheist was having an argument with a Christian mate, and he said, okay, if there's a God, let him prove himself by striking me dead right now. Nothing happened. The atheist said, ah, there you are, God doesn't exist. And his friend said, you've proved nothing of the sort. All you've proved is that he is very patient. So if we ask, where are we going? The answer is, Jesus, he is the heir. O.J. Simpson, all of us, will be in his hands. And I'm glad about that. I'm glad about that because I trust him. There are not many I trust. I do trust him. Look at his life, see if you can. And if we ask, where have we come from? The answer is Jesus. He is the creator. He didn't just start in Bethlehem. He was there at the beginning of the universe, creating, the agent of creation. And if we then ask, well, how do we get there? The answer is Jesus. He's the sustainer of all things. So the universe was made for him, by him, and through him. That's it. For him, by him, and it's upheld through him. And the worry is that this Christmas we'll just keep looking into the manger. That's the worry. That you'll just keep peering into the manger and it's just so containable. You'll keep peering into the manger when in fact you get each breath from Jesus. And you'll stand before him at the end of time and that's declared by his resurrection. And he's given you everything you've had in life. All the gifts you've maybe made a great deal of, and that's great. You see, if this is true, this is the issue. then Jesus has to be right at the centre. Then he has to be as central to my life as a ball is to a game. He's got to be right at the centre of my life. He's got to be, if this is true. If it's not true, I can leave it on one side. And I haven't even this evening talked about his death. I haven't even talked about why he came. I haven't even talked about the fact that over the crib were the words, "Born to die." You'll call him Jesus because he'll save his people from their sins. That's what Joseph is told in a dream, Matthew 1, verse 21. I haven't even spoken about that. But my plea is that you'll come back and unwrap this further. So I wonder if you can just take up the service sheet and see an opportunity to do that after Christmas in the new year. And not surprisingly, we've decided to have a meal with a talk. Why not just come along to that? And the talk is entitled, "Jesus Isn't Just for Christmas." No. No, he's not. If I made by him, for him, and upheld through him, he's not just for Christmas. And our plea is that because of this Christmas, you'll discover that actually Jesus Christ is meant to be as central to your life as a ball is to a game. That success in life actually depends on what I do with him, and that I'm made by him, for him, and upheld by him, and therefore, this is a season of good news, of great joy. Let's pray together. Lord Jesus, thank you so much that you give us each breath, and we rejoice in the fact that ultimately you are our past, our present, and our future, and that you can be trusted. And I just pray for every person in this church tonight, as we head into the Christmas season, that you would indeed cause us to rejoice at every breath, for we breathe because you have enabled that to happen.